Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning. Joining me from a couple of miles away here in Miami is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. How are we doing?
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, just sitting there waiting for the finals. Nothing on his agenda, but a nice Memorial Day weekend is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Had my feet just propped up on the couch tonight. You know, some extra cushions behind my head. You know, just relaxing evening. Watching Jimmy Butler build a brick house and somehow miraculously pull off this comeback and then just have it ripped right out from under him.
You did have to stay up late for this pod. I don't mean to not respect your time, Mr. McMahon. Well, we had one for the books. I know that you can say that about a lot of things, but this was historic in a lot of different ways. Not only historic because, look, the championship could have been determined tonight. I don't know. I don't mean to throw any shade at Denver. I know everyone's real. If you don't acknowledge them as the greatest team in the history of the NBA, they get a little on edge. Denver may win this next series easily. They may not win it. But I can tell you one thing. Boston would have no chance to win it had Derek White not tipped in the shot with a tenth of a second left. And it was a tenth of a second. Some of the history that is going on here. Obviously, Boston now gets the chance to be the first team in NBA history out of 150 before them to come back from 3-0 down. It was just the second time in NBA history that a team made a buzzer beater when they were behind facing elimination. The other one, Michael Jordan, 1989, over Craig Elo, the shot.
What did a young Wendy think of that one?
That Cavs team, that was probably their best chance ever to beat the Bulls, to be honest with you. I remember seeing it on an antenna wherever I was. I remember where I was. I won't get into it. I wasn't at home, but I was watching on an antenna, and it wasn't a clear signal. It wasn't clear that he had made it right away. He did. Fifth consecutive road elimination game won by the Celtics. The Celtics have done a lot of incredible things in the 76-year history of their franchise. That's not at the top, but it's on the first page, and give themselves a chance in doing so to make the history with the 3-0 potential 0-3 comeback. And then the actual nature of the way this game played out, which I'm not so sure either team deserved to win because neither team played well, but I don't think either team really deserved to lose. And snatching it away from potentially iconic Jimmy Butler performance. Jimmy Butler was 3 of 19 with 2 minutes left to go in this game. Couldn't get off the floor. From my vantage point, having a miserable game, not what we would expect from his incredible playoff resume. And in the last 2 minutes and 1 second, well, I shouldn't say that, for the next 2 minutes and 1 second, he scored 10 points and made 3 enormously clutch free throws with 3 seconds left. And that went for naught. And Bontemps, is a lot more that happened. And I'll tell you a little bit what it was like in the Celtics locker room. I got in there right as guys were watching the video for the first time. But Bontemps, you had a lot of other assignments and you were busy tonight looking at other things about this game too.
Yeah, I mean, this just really was the Boston Celtics in a nutshell, this whole thing. We talked all the time about how they're 38-2 when they hit 40% of the threes. They literally had the worst shooting game of their entire season. They went 7 for 35. They never made less than 9 in a single game all year. But they fought and they played really hard. They played great defense. They shut down Bam and Jimmy the whole game, dominated the whole game. It was almost a carbon copy of game 7 in the conference finals last year when they had a 9 or 10 point lead with 3 minutes to go and then completely imploded. Exactly what they did again now. Like, let Jimmy Butler score 10 straight points, fouling him on and ones, fouling him in the corner on 3-point shots he was never going to make, and putting themselves in a position where it seems like their season is going to go down in flames. just like they were a week ago or whatever, 5 days ago, right? Who knows how many days it was at this point when they were down 3-0 in this series. And then they turn around and Derek White on a team full of big names, he's about the quietest guy on the team, just makes an unbelievably heady play to inbound the ball, cut right to the corner to be there if he needs to be an outlet to get a shot. And when Marcus Smart's shot went up, bolts right to the rim, doesn't ball watch, doesn't just is like, I'm going to make sure I'm in position to make a play, made the play of his life. And somehow we're sitting here talking about the Boston Celtics in game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not really sure how, but here we sit.
McMahon, that's
the Boston Cockroaches. The Boston Cockroaches. I mean, in the most complimentary sense, these dudes will not die. They just keep crawling out from underneath. I mean, it was a miracle that Miami was in position to win this game. As poorly as Jimmy played for 46 minutes, as poorly as Adebayo played, I mean, the first half was Tatum just absolutely kicking Jimmy's ass up and down the court on both ends. Then he disappears in the second half, but they, you know, you still, it's, I was sitting there watching this saying, I can't believe Miami's going to win this game. And lo and behold, they didn't.
No, we had the same conversation, me and Brian sitting there. I mean, when Jimmy's shot went in, I mean, as people know, we write these obits. I turned to Brian. Mm-hmm. I said, well, my obit's going to see the light of day now because it's been rewritten 6 times in these playoffs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's
going to be 7.
And now it's at least 7. It could be a lot more than that at this point. It was just an unbelievable. I mean, that was just why. I mean, games like that are just why the job is so great. I mean, this is why everybody watches sports. You go to these games, you go to all these games, and you just see stuff you've never seen before. And like, I mean, that was just, like you said it, McMahon, like it was a miracle that Miami was in position to close the series out. And then it took a miracle for them to lose it at the end on top of it.
Have you guys seen the win probability graph from this game? it's a super dorky thing, but it's green, 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 and high green, right? High yep. green all the way until whoosh, it whooshes down to 99% red. And then whoop, spikes right back to 100. Up to 100%. Green.
I have 3 letters for you all to consider.
Oh, here we go, baby. Chan them.
B-P-I. Back from the dead like the Celtics themselves.
B-P-I.
The math don't lie.
Never mess with those nerds. Never doubt the nerds. Hey, what though? You know what? I used to say never doubt Jimmy Butler. And hey, we're 0 for 2 on Jimmy Butler guarantees. Fool me once.
Yeah, well, he made another one.
Fool me, he made another one. Fool me twice. I lose your trust. Celtics winning this series, baby. I'm off the Jimmy Butler bandwagon. I know Bond Tips will never jump off, but I'm off the Jimmy bandwagon. Well, he's let me down twice.
Well, so I'm a voter again for the Conference Finals MVP award.
Oh, good God almighty. Here we go.
Well, Doris Burke texts me with, I don't know, 9 minutes to go in the game. She's like, who are you voting for MVP? Doris here doing radio. I assume she's got a vote. Text me and says, who are you voting for MVP? I turned to Brian and said, I think I got to vote for Caleb Martin as far as MVP. Gonna say. And Brian was like, yeah, who else are you going to vote for? Because at this
Jimmy
point,
was Jimmy 3 of 19.
He was horrible.
And then scores 10 points in the last 2 minutes, and you think they're going to win. It's unbelievable. Well, by the way, right. Wendy, I got to give you credit. You called for the Caleb Martin move in the starting lineup. He's the only reason that the Heat were able to stay within shouting distance, him and then Duncan Robinson. And by the way,
although Duncan missed 2.
Boy.
Man, he is going to be seeing.
The one was the test, the win. You know, you say that, though. They took the lead.
I know, but Duncan, clean looks from the wing where he thrives, when he's going thrives. Oh, oof. All right, so I was fortunate enough.
Oh, sorry, Bontemps, your stats, 38-2 when the Celtics shoot 40% from three? Is that the stat now?
They're 38-2 when they do, and they are now 30-31 when they don't. Because
that's not the stat.
Two.
They're 1-0 when they shoot 20% or worse.
That is true. That is the new stat.
Yeah, they had their worst three-point shooting game of the year.
Mm-hmm. By percentage and by makes, both.
Only
and here
seven
we sit.
Makes. Tatum was on the podium afterwards, and he was like, my God, we only made seven threes. And by the way, he and Jaylen Brown, they combined for 57 points in this game. No threes.
None.
No threes.
But, the Heat were about as bad in the paint.
I know.
What I mean, look, what they shoot in the paint, 20%?
I wrote a piece a couple days ago. I called this the Bizarro series. That's what this is. This is the Bizarro Conference Finals. And it's a Seinfeld reference. I stopped making Seinfeld references mostly because folks under the age of 30 don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Sorry, the Bizarro. So I was just the way things went, I got into the Celtics locker room pretty much before anybody else after the game. Chris Forsberg from Comcast Boston was in there too. And the guys really hadn't seen the play yet. Blake Griffin was like, he saw it. He's like, I cannot believe how close it was. It was closer than they thought. And he showed Derek White the replay. And Derek, I don't think Derek could see. He probably saw it on the scoreboard when he looked, but he hadn't like had a chance to look at it and like reverse it and watch it. And so he watched it right there, and he was with Grant Williams and Marcus Smart, and they were just marveling at it as they watched it. And then I showed him Wob, Worldwide Wob, our buddy Rob Perez. He tweeted out a four box that showed four different angles of the play. One was like overhead, one was of the Celtics bench, one was of the Miami bench, and one was like from behind the play. Four different angles of it. And I handed Derek my phone, and he watched that two or three times, reversing it and watching it back. And the one thing we were marveling at was that when Marcus put the ball up, he caught in turn and put the ball up. Derek was at the three-point line in the corner. Derek White inbounded the ball, and he immediately cut to the corner because I guess that's where he goes on the play.
Well, it was just a smart play to relocate to a spot where he could be an option to get a shot. It was just it was another part of a play that was really smart.
Right. And I saw some people, saying that Max Strus like let the Heat down because he didn't box out Derek White. Well, first off, I'm not 100% sure Max Strus was on Derek White. I think it might have been Gabe Vincent.
Yeah, and Gabe doubled off onto Tatum on the end.
And it worked. They took away the first option, which was Tatum. They took away the second option, which was Jaylen Brown. Marcus Smart was the third option. The Heat did a good job on defending that play. And Derek White's just really, really fast. And he got from Marcus Smart took the shot, and he got from the three-point corner to the rim in time to get the tip back. And it helped. Bontemps, you mentioned this earlier to me. The ball didn't come off like a long rebound. Mm-hmm. The ball rimmed out and came in and rebounded short.
And on the same side that Derek was crashing from, and Derek didn't ball watch on the play. Like, it was just really just a super heady winning play all the way around by
that's
him.
If it had come out the other side, I think Tatum might have gotten the tip.
He might have. I mean, Tatum was crashing hard too, but it's just like
he might not have been fast enough.
It was just so much serendipity all the way around, which is all the more insane when you look at the way the Celtics once again went into, as one of our buddies likes to call it, prevent offense late in the fourth quarter. That Derek White putback was their last field goal before that was with 4 minutes and 58 seconds to go.
That's ridiculous.
Game.
Yeah. Well, hold before we get into that, let me a couple more things from the locker room.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom. Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Driving without a seatbelt could cost you everything. But despite that, there are still drivers on the road who just won't buckle up. Some of those drivers will be pulled over and given expensive tickets by law enforcement. Some of those drivers not wearing their seatbelts will be involved in crashes. Some will survive, but some won't. Wearing your seatbelt could be the difference between making it home to your loved ones and not making it at all. Every day, when you get in your vehicle and decide whether to buckle up, remember, that's the single most effective way to protect your life in the event of a crash. Make it home safely to the people you care about. Don't risk it, click it, or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA. So Marcus Smart says, thank God we challenged. So while you're talking about that, Bontemps, the Heat were in zone. The Celtics were crawling the ball up the court and not even getting into a play until there were 7 seconds left. They had repeated bad possessions.
Playing not to lose.
Heated awful possessions. Bontemps and I are sitting there going, call timeout, Joe. Call timeout, Joe. He doesn't call timeout because he doesn't use any timeouts, which he should have used, quite frankly. He's sitting on two with the foul with 2.1 seconds left. He uses one to challenge. And Bontemps did you explain why that was important?
I did on earlier on SportsCenter. Okay. We were talking about it with McMahon before the pod.
Wow. So those who didn't watch
for those who didn't watch SportsCenter. So I called Monty McCutcheon, talked to Monty McCutcheon after the game to get an explanation for why it went from 2.1
Please
seconds to 3 seconds.
Please identify who Monty McCutcheon is.
The head of refs.
The referees and the guy who was the clearly best referee when he stopped refereeing. He explained that if Joe Mazzulla had not challenged that play, they would have checked to see if it was a two or a three, because the first question was it a two or a three? So they were going to check that anyway, because Josh Tiven called a foul.
This is just to be clear, this is the foul that Al Horford fouls Jimmy Butler with. There was 2.1 seconds left when the clock stopped with the Celtics up by 2 points. Go ahead.
That's right. So Josh Tiven calls a foul 2.1 seconds to go in the corner. They were going to go check and see if it was a two or three. Joe challenges the play, obviously loses the challenge. Jimmy gets the three free throws. However, when they go back and look at the play, they determine that they need to add an extra 9/10 of a second to the clock for when Al Horford's arm hit Jimmy Butler's arms when he's going up. And that's when they determined that there was 3 seconds to go when that happened. And as it turns out, the Celtics needed every one of those 10ths of a second in order to win this game. So ridiculous.
Let me say a couple of things. One, I know that there is some controversy about whether they needed to add 0.9 9/10. It does look, there are some angles on freeze frames where it does indeed look like he makes contact with Horford with 3 seconds left. Okay. That's number one. But even if that doesn't appease people who think that they were screwed, Jimmy Butler double dribbled or traveled or carried.
He actually did on the play, but that we don't really need to go into like referee talk. You're allowed to like regather the ball when you lose it. So we don't need to go down that road.
All right.
It doesn't matter anyway. The Heat.
You ruined his Eric Lewis joke. Go ahead, McMahon.
No, Bontemps trampled all over my Eric Lewis burner joke. Forget it. I'm upset now.
We'll be upset about something else anyway.
That dribble didn't look right to me. I know they're never going to call that there.
It all worked out in the end. The Heat had to get one defensive stop and they didn't get it.
Right. The other thing that Marcus Smart said after the game, because it was a little bit insane how fast he shot that ball with 3 seconds left. He caught it and immediately turned. I don't even know. I mean, I assume he saw the rim, but
he turned around. I mean, he got a pretty clean look at it.
Yeah, he almost made it.
I was going to say, I thought it was going in when he,
I did too.
Go.
But the reason that he shot it so fast, he said after the game, was because in the last round against Philadelphia, was that game four, Bontemps?
Yeah, it was game four when they brought the ball up and he ended up making a shot, but it was after pretty clearly after the clock expired.
It was less than a second. It was not super close, but it was less than a second after the clock went off. And so he was like, look, I was late getting that one. I wasn't going to be late shooting this one. And again, because he shot it so fast, Derek White had time to get his hand up there and knock it in. So it's very tempting to just focus on that last play because it's such an amazing play. There was so much else happening. And now I wonder, like, I wonder where Jimmy Butler's legs are. Now, I made this mistake last year. In game five down here in Miami, the Heat won to go up 3-2. And Jimmy Butler, he was dealing with that knee injury. Okay.
The Celtics wanted to go up 3-2.
I apologize. The Celtics wanted to go up 3-2. And he was dealing with that knee injury and he could barely move. He had almost nothing in games four and five last year. And I was like, Heat or DOA. You know, we're going up to Boston to close this series out. And we all went up to Boston and Jimmy Butler had one of the greatest playoff games I've ever seen. And so I am not going to count Jimmy Butler out. That said, he did not have legs in this game. And he only had 14 points in game five. And with a tough turnaround, he barely came off the court. How many minutes did he play?
He played 46. I think he sat out the first 2 minutes of the second quarter, play the rest of the game. Jeez. And I thought he was going to play 48.
The first 46 of those were tough. You know, could not get any kind of separation. Like you said, when he had no lift, the Celtics just were shutting everything down in the paint.
I mean, how many shots did he get blocked?
Just hard to watch.
Well, Bam, so the Heat are 6-0 this playoffs when Bam scores 20. They are 2-5 the last seven times he scored under 20, including the last three games. He is, I believe, shooting under 40% and averaging 12 points, maybe 13. I'll round it up in these last three
games. The Heat went 14 for 30 from three in this game. They were 19 for 63 from two. Shot 30% on twos. And a lot of that was Jimmy and Bam. Jimmy Bam couldn't do anything. And
by the way, a lot of that was Derek White. As Kurt Goldsberry tweeted, Miami was 1-12 or 1-12 when Derek White was the primary defender. Jimmy was 0-6.
And you want to talk about
Tatum shut him down. White shut him down. I mean, they're switching, but they've got, like, you throw Brown in the mix, you throw
Grant Williams,
you throw Marcus Smart. Like, they've got so many guys who are capable of holding their own against Jimmy, and you know, he just looks like a guy who's taken a lot of body blows throughout this series.
Well, when you want to talk about Jimmy's legs, you go back to the earlier games in the series. He was feasting, and Derek White's an all defensive team guard. He's an awesome defensive player. And Jimmy, with his extra size and strength, was feasting on that matchup to start the series. They kept getting that matchup. Jimmy kept attacking it and attacking it and attacking it. And like you said, McMahon, today he kept getting it and not going anywhere.
Well, and he tried just to bully him one time. And you know, ended up getting an offensive foul that they reviewed for a flagrant.
Right.
They just hadn't been able to bully these guys.
No, I mean, it was the whole thing was wild. And like, I mean, Jackson dropped in here. The Celtics had seven games where they shot 26% or worse this season before today. They lost them all. And this is a team that has been, we've talked so much about the 3-point shooting. And it, like, this was the game sitting there for the Heat. The Celtics couldn't buy a basket. They played really hard. They played good defense, but like, this was the one sitting there for Miami to get. And I just feel for Jimmy. I mean, he summoned it down the stretch and it had a chance to be just this legendary turnaround in the game.
Right.
And like, I was talking to Nick after the game to Friedel, and he was like, this is the quietest locker room I've maybe ever been in after a game. Like, just, because they know, like, it was right there, right on. It was 10 years ago. There was a game six in that same building where the San Antonio Spurs thought they had it, and Ray Allen hit a three, and then they went on to win the game. And that's the NBA Finals. This is the conference finals, but it feels like that. It felt like that. Like, it just got snatched away just at the absolute last dying second of the game.
Eric Spoelstra, after the game, took a very sort of confident stance He was like, oh, this is great competition. this is what you'd expect. This is what you'd expect from us. Everything in our season's been hard. So we'll just go. I mean, he was very clearly trying to set a tone. And I would guess he tried to set the same tone with his team, which was spin positive. Hey guys, we're the eighth seed. We have a great opportunity to go win a game seven. Don't worry about the fact that you may be historically viewed as goats. this is going to be great. Like, he was working hard to do that. And by the way, I think that's probably a good idea. I'm not sure if they're going to be, impacted by that, but Spo was already working on game seven in the moments after game six. And, you have to respect that, but you also realize he's doing that because he's worried, and naturally worried about his team's psyche, because, we are on a holiday weekend, so there'll be a little bit less of the noise, but there will be noise starting on Tuesday and for a long time if they lose it. And there is, people were wondering tonight how much the Celtics might lean into the 2004 Red Sox, how many of them they can fly to Boston for Monday to get him in the stands. This has a different feel than that did, but.
Well, that's the Yankees, and you had the 86 years and all the extra, and the fact that they lost in seven games the year before to the Yankees, all that stuff. But it's the Celtics are just the funniest team. I mean, it's like they just can't ever make life easy on themselves ever. And like, you watch the way they've played these last three games and you go, this is a team that should have been that's probably the most talented team in the league. And it has just not played like this very consistently over the past 2 years, unless they've absolutely had to. And then when they do, they tend to repeatedly. I mean, like you said, Brian, there's like 1,000 stats in my newser about the various things that the Celtics have done. You mentioned the five road elimination game victories in a row. It's twice happened in NBA history. Once was the Phoenix Suns and once was the Celtics. The difference is that's happened with Boston over the past two playoffs, over like five or six rounds. Those two stretches for the Suns, it was like over 10 years. And for the Celtics, it was over, I think it was from like 68 to 74 for the Celtics and like 81 to 90 for the Suns. So you're talking about like, oh yeah, you win, you play in like one road elimination game, you win it, then you do it in the next year or whatever. These guys are doing this once or twice a series at this point because they can't win any home games. So it's just been the strangest trip all the way along.
Yeah. Jackson mentioned that Johnny Damon was at the game tonight. I didn't see that, but he keeps track of ex Yankees.
And ex Red Sox.
Yes, both. I think he was down. I think he might live down here now, Johnny Damon.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
They call it running a business for a reason, because every day feels like a sprint to the finish. It takes a lot of work to make it all work. But with Clover and Merchant One, you're always a step ahead. Now is the perfect time to upgrade your point of sale technology. We make it easy to accept payments, run your entire business, and sell more. Clover plus Merchant One, better business solutions. Go to clover.com/M1 to get started. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Yeah, so the Celtics, it was a little bit worrisome for the Celtics. As long as we're going to talk about the worrisomeness for Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, worrisome for the Celtics that when they faced the pressure that they didn't exactly step up to the plate.
Well, but we knew that was going to be the case.
Well, I'm just talking about for game seven. I'm just talking about, think about that mindset for game seven. They have played much more freely these last three games. now they're going to play under a little bit of pressure because now there is expectation. Before, I mean, it was obviously going to be a terribly disappointing end of the season, but had they lost one of these last three, it would have been like, well, you just got beat. Now they're the favorite. They're the favorite to be in the finals.
I think the issue for the Celtics
always has been BPI, baby.
That's right. I think the issue for the Celtics is the same one it is every game, which is that they look great for the first 42 minutes oftentimes, and then they get to the final 5 or 6 minutes and they go haywire. And that was like, they didn't play the cleanest game today. They missed shots, but they dominated the game for the large run of it and then got down to the final 4 or 5 minutes and then did their Celtics thing of we're just going to hold the ball and not really run offense and jack up some shots and maybe a couple will go in. And if they don't, then hold on to your seat because who the hell knows where the game's going to go.
And let Jimmy Butler take over despite yes. the fact that it looked like he had absolutely no juice whatsoever until that point.
I mean, it's just the fact that they came down here for game six at an elimination game and had a carbon copy game, basically, of what they did last year in game seven. It just sums up the Celtic team all the way around.
Yeah, there was this. You talking about serendipity, which is a good word, Bontemps. I wish I used it in my story. The serendipity of last year, Jimmy Butler having that 3-pointer, which Al Horford defended.
Yeah.
I mean, I gave Al Horford credit. I think Jimmy just missed it, but Al Horford was there, put his hand up, got in the way, defended it. And, you know, Jimmy missed it. Tonight, Al fouls Jimmy. And I mean, it was kind of a crazy review because it was a clear foul, right? Don't you think? I mean, he didn't review that to get the time back on the clock. He reviewed that because he was like a desperation review. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
I would imagine it was. I didn't, to be honest, we didn't ask him about it today. And so there was so much other stuff going on. I truly didn't circle back with the league until later because I didn't get a chance to really think about it till then. But
I think it was what the hell? I've got a review, might as well use it.
I got 2 timeouts with 3 seconds.
Yeah. That's what I assume is what it was like, hey, you never know. Maybe he stepped out of bounds or something, right? Like you take a swing and see if it works. Right,
for sure.
I mean, it turned out to be a hugely pivotal moment in the game all the way around. It's just unbelievable. An unbelievable turn of events all the way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, game seven. I don't know if we're podcasting after game seven.
Yes, we are. We are podcasting after game seven. Yes.
When did Bontemps become the boss?
No, Brian read the thing earlier. Brian knows what the schedule is. Jackson laid it out earlier. He just forgot.
Yeah, I did forget.
We're podding after game seven, and then we're previewing game one of the finals.
Oh, okay. Bontemps still wearing his dress shirt, so I guess he thinks he's in charge.
So we got game seven coming up, and then we will, like we did last year, we'll have podcasts that post on the Hoop Collective feed the day of each finals game. So it'll be fun.
Brian had to think about that one for a second.
Nuggets sweep.
Well, I will say, if you're a Nuggets fan, you wanted Derek White to miss that tip in.
Yeah, you prefer the four home games and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's the other thing. Number one, the Heat they're not as potent as a team as the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they won't win, but we have to be honest. I went back and looked. The Nuggets have owned the Celtics the last couple of years.
I told you, the Heat. Joker's 10-2 against Bam. I mean, it's a tough
matchup. Whatever, but
yeah,
you know, the last time they played was in February. It was a close game. It was in Miami. I think the Nuggets won by 4. And Jokic didn't have the greatest game that night. He only went 12 of 14 with 12 rebounds and 8 assists. I think over the last 2 seasons, he's shooting 67% against the Heat.
I mean, he shoots in the 63% games. Against the league. So,
I agree. I'm just, you know, yeah, I'm not saying
better than average.
Yeah. So if you're a Denver fan, you probably didn't love seeing that, but now you get a team. And like, by the way, a whole bunch of guys got like banged up in this game, like Robert Williams, who was great defensively, hurt his wrist. I thought Grant Williams hurt his hand. Jaylen Brown, who's been dealing with a wrist or hand thing, he re-aggravated that. You know, Jimmy
has been, this has been a war all the way through. I mean, it's been like the rest of these playoffs. It's been unpredictable and pretty compelling all the way through. So we'll see what happens on Monday.
All right. Thank you, Listen Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson for staying up late. We'll talk to you after game 7.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.